Veterans Hall on Side in the Line. This is going to be on the radio. We're talking to...
I'm talking to John here.
And John, you've had some, shall we say, you got a guitar on your back, some street spirits in your hand, and a coffee cup.
Yeah, I'm just tired of being harassed by Wiener Schnitzel employee there, and they keep screwing us around, and they harass us, you know, going by in their trucks, and I'm getting tired, so what can be done about this?
What kind of harassment have you been suffering?
I'm being called names and stuff, you know. Not that it bothers me, but I'm getting tired of this idiot, and that's about it.
And you said you also had some problems with the management there. They were inappropriate.
We tried to sweep the parking lot, and they came out with a broom and started, you know, hitting us with a broom.
How many were you sleeping out there?
Just two of us.
And were you in a vehicle, or are you yourself out there?
Walking along with their guitars, trying to, you know, make love, you know, peace and love. And these idiots, this idiot comes out, the manager, and broke a broom over my brother's back, and start beating me when I'm trying to protect my guitar from smashing him. He just keeps hitting me with a broomstick.
How long ago did this happen?
That's quite a while back.
This year? Or?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Any reports of other beatings of people on the streets you've heard about?
No.
Camping tickets or police harassment?
That's about it.
Thank you.
I'm finished.
Thank you. All right.
We have a second person who's had the bad experiences at Winter
Street. Out of us. Well, you know, me and Billy went to get something to eat at the Wiener Schnitzel one evening.
Yeah.
And it was like sitting out on our tables eating, and they came up and called us dirty hippies, and what else they call us?
Yeah.
They wanted the bums. We just bought something to eat here. We're customers. We go, what's wrong with you people, man? We're just sitting here eating up. They got a real hang up. They're Arabians or something like that, and they're really discriminated against us, you know, us people with long hair, you know. We didn't dig it. We just got left.
You guys keep messing with us,
We're going to go to ACLU or something like that, because you know something, man? Just because we have long hair and you mess with us, man, don't mess with us, man. We're customers here.
Yeah.
And your name is?
My name is Davey Azzolino.
And Davey, any other reports of beatings, hassles by cops, other problems you want to bring to the attention of Free Radio?
I kind of broke my hand at the boardwalk.
How long ago was this?
It's about 5 months ago when the Mary Wells was playing. Was that her? Mary Wells?
Mary Wells. Now, did the security guards throw you down or the police?
Yeah, threw me down. Because I was picking up a kid. The boy, he said, you want to see the concert? I lifted him up so he could see the concert. And
they jumped him.
They jumped me, threw him down, and screwed my arm up. So I had to go to the hospital.
For no reason.
You were there?
No, I was in there at the time, but Billy told me all about it. And it's my brother.
So that's what happened.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right, Robert.
May you have a pleasant meal. So it's November 24th. It's about 12:20. We're in front of Union Grove Music talking to Mark Bourne. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Mark, you're in a wheelchair, and I notice you have an extension there that allows your leg to be put up, but unfortunately it's the wrong extension on the wrong side, and it's your left leg that's damaged, right?
Yes.
And what happened to your leg?
I got hit by a car up on Mission Street.
And you now have a pin in your leg, do I understand?
Yeah, I have a pin that goes from my knee to my ankle, and then pins holding that there.
It's more like a rod than a pin.
Rod, yeah.
But apparently the pin is bent or something?
Yeah, the top pin, I apparently put a little weight on it, so the pin is kind of at an angle now.
And I notice your leg is somewhat swollen there, and does that put you in danger of losing your leg?
Yeah, that's what they said. If I don't elevate it and lay down, then it's very possible I can still lose my leg, and at the same time, out here, it's very difficult to lay down because it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz. And
it's illegal to lie down on Pacific Avenue any time of the day or night.
Except maybe on a bench occasionally, I might get away with it. But it's just hard to do.
So you went, I understand, this weekend with the assistance of a couple of activists to try to get, a voucher for either Dominican or, I mean, you tried to get into Dominican and then you tried to get a voucher for a hotel room or something?
I was able to get a two-day voucher. Uh-huh. But it's, again, at the end of the month, so they're out of money. They said at the first of the month I should have no problem, so. But it's getting from here to there that I'm concerned about.
Now, the wheelchair you had originally had two extensions, one for the right leg, one for the left leg, so it could be elevated, right?
Right. Right, I had them both elevated for 2 days, and then one day I put this leg up and took a crank, and it just busted.
Who supplied this wheelchair originally?
I think Matt might have got it through Horse Niders.
And have you been back there asking for a replacement for a defective product?
No, I have their phone number, but this being the holidays, everybody's closed for the weekend, so on Monday I'm going to try.
Go ahead.
I'm going to try calling them on Monday and see if he would do a swap. But I also did yesterday get an order for the left breast.
Okay.
But I don't know where the money to pay for that's going to come. I don't know if having an order means that the hospital will pay for that.
Now, has the hospital been treating you well? I mean, have you been oh, yeah. seen there?
The one down here at Inline is where I've been going pretty much. When I go to Dominican, they just said, well, that doesn't look bad to me. I mean, I guess what they want to see is blood or infection.
I see. Well,
and just being swollen to them.
Yeah, I mean, let's wait until we get the corpse. That's what I say. Then you can really raise a ruckus. Back with Boxer Bill. I mean, who knows? Maybe we can carry the corpse to Catherine Byers' house, as Bernard Kutzner suggested in a letter some months ago. But given the fact that she's the author of Continuing the Sleeping Ban, and he froze to death.
People walk up to me and say, you're next after Boxer. I said, do you know what happened to him? And they said, yeah, and you're next. And I'm not going to.
You refuse to freeze to death?
The streets are not going to get me. I'm bigger than they are. I can handle it.
Where do you sleep at night?
Sometimes I just roll around all night just to stay warm. I generally, if I do sleep, it's like, if I find a place out of the wind, you know, because it's pretty cold. So this keeps me going, you know.
Do you ever encounter police officers, rangers at night?
Yeah. Not so much. The legal part's not so bad. It's just the cold and wet that really bothers me.
What about troll busters, anti-homeless bigots?
Not recently. I thank God for that. I haven't had any problem with that. Part of it for a while.
You yourself were assaulted in Capitola, four thugs a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure, about a year and a half ago, maybe? And, that, in fact, I was in the hospital for that, and I think you guys might have took me there, and, they don't even have that paperwork now. So I guess they must ship their stuff to the, records department rather soon, because they didn't even have any record of that. But I also got a number today because when I was young, I worked for Ralph's Market, and I got in an accident then, and that's how my employment terminated. I wasn't ever terminated, so I may have a small retirement.
Well, you certainly look like you, as a veteran of the street wars, you could stand a little rest. Thank you, Mark. Anything you want to conclude with?
No, I'd just like to thank you and your wife for your help.
If I were married, I would agree, but...
Well, you and your... friend.
Vicious associate, Becky.
Yes, business associate.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. Keep in there and keep us advised.
Yes.
Let me think about this.
We're on the corner with a drummer who may or may not want to remain in the corner.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, this Sunday morning. A little frosty out there as winter blossoms or crystallizes. And particularly cold for folks who have no place to sleep. As most of you regular listeners know, Santa Cruz is a city with a sleeping ban. $54 fines under Ordinance Municipal Code 6.36010A, which criminalizes all sleeping outdoors or in a vehicle with the exception of a couple of small exceptions. You can park for 3 nights in a driveway per month with the written permission of both the renter and the owner. You can park for... two vehicles can park in a parking lot of a business, 3 in the parking lot of a church with the written permission of the owner, and there aren't too many businesses or churches that apparently allow that. And then you have the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, which is the armory with 100 spaces and 60 more spaces for a couple of rotating church floors every night, though it must be said that technically Church floors in the city of Santa Cruz are also illegal under the sleeping ban, because churches are not considered domiciles, and it's only legal to sleep in a domicile, given the very strange, very strong, I should say harsh or draconian law against sleeping in Santa Cruz, also against covering up with blankets, the next section that follows the sleeping ban. And there are a couple of other minor exceptions. Side yards or backyards you are allowed to sleep in if not visible from the street with the permission of the owner in the city. But you can't sleep in a restaurant or any structure not intended for as a domicile for human habitation. And that means that you can't sleep in a garage, you can't sleep on top of a house, because that's not considered inside a domicile. So it's interesting. All these things have resulted in tickets in the past, mostly sort of strange tickets that wouldn't say were the norm. But the reality is homeless people are moved around in Santa Cruz. They don't feel secure sleeping in groups. They can't put up a tent against the cold. That's the camping ban, even a harsher reality, and one that perhaps even more important than the sleeping ban in its own way. But sleeping ban is such an obvious human rights abuse that it's something that activists have been focusing on and will be focusing on this Tuesday at City Council, the last City Council of the 1998, 99, 2000 old City Council. We will say goodbye to Cynthia Matthews, Mike Rotkin, Catherine Byers, and Michael Hernandez. They will all be moving on, no doubt, to be recycling back, some of them, in 2002, unfortunately, just as Scott Kennedy is unfortunately being recycled in the new City Council, the man who brought us the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law, the man who brought us the ask for a dime peacefully after dark, go to jail, or law as well. These are both misdemeanors if they are committed twice. It's an example of the kind of changes that happened to council members. Kennedy came in as a liberal and ended up as a bosom buddy of the business and a beach south of Laurel Canfield Company gang who wanted to redevelop that area, and of course are now proceeding the kind of the successor program, the Dolphin Lee program, is proceeding. We're going to talk a little bit, and here's some tape on that situation, though there's not too much new news on that issue. We'll be talking a bit about that. And you will have a chance to talk, too. We do have phone lines open, as usual, 427-3772. 427-FRSC is the number here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. So pick up your phone, give us a call, let us know what's on your mind. That's the royal we here. You're talking to Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, a man whose bathrobe covers many sins. Sounds like somebody's calling us here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Eleanor.
Hey, Eleanor.
I just wanted to kind of put out a word for those of you and your listening audience that are going to go to the city council or going to write letters or anything, that if they could just focus on only the people who are out there that are ill or injured or disabled in any way. Because if you look at any given portion of our population, any 2,000 or 3,000 people within the community, at any given time, you're going to have a few hundred people that are either ill, injured, surgeries, whatever, because this is life. And among our 2,000 to 3,000 homeless, at all times, there's that same portion of a few hundred people who are ill or injured or disabled. Mm-hmm. And they're out there, and they're most vulnerable. And I don't think that enough is being done within the community that can be done, enough of what can be done for these people. I'm sad about it, because it's nothing new, it's constant, but there you have it, people in their suffering. And if when you're speaking at City Council, you address the people who are tuned in on the television sets in their living rooms, keep them in mind as much or even more so than the City Council, and let them know in that way that they can relate to it, that all of us at some time are ill and have operations or become injured or something. This is life. And it's a terrible time for anybody when it happens, but when it happens and you're outside, it's deplorable. And in this community, we're not taking care of our own, even though the agencies are in place and the money is there. it's not happening.
I know you have a particular expertise, caller, because you were living in your vehicle for several years with a very painful disability, right?
That's true, but I wasn't affected like these other people because I was in a car and I had a full-time caregiver. My partner took care of me, and I got the care I needed. It was a hard life. I'm not trying to detract from that. It was, but I'm speaking about the people who are not in a car. If I were not in a car, I would have died because I can't take care of myself. I can't. I'm worse off than many of the people that are out there, but I wasn't in their position. I appreciate you bringing that up because I felt the pain myself, but I think that these people have it worse than me because they don't have incomes, many of them, and not for their own fault, like in the case of the gentleman that you were just interviewing, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
His income was erroneously cut off when he was hit by the car. He was in the hospital. He was in rehab. Something happened, and they cut off his income. And he's been without it for a couple of months now, and as a result, he was without his Medicaid, or Medi-Cal, rather. And he went on this Medi-Cruise, which I think that a lot of the people that are out there are stuck with when they don't have... when they're not on SSI or workers' comp or unemployment or whatever program, they're stuck with Medi-Cruise. And Medi-Cruise, they're not doing their part. I think that their agenda is to keep costs down at all costs, and that includes lives and legs and what have you. In the case of Mark, I was the person who was with him in the emergency room.
How long ago was that?
A week ago. Not last Saturday, not last night, but the week before.
I know that we were concerned that the caregivers, I called them even poverty pimps in my frustration, that I guess you tried to call, were able to provide a little help, but then seemed to back off. Do you want to give us an update on how that
went? Well, I got help not from the county. I got help through St. Vincent de Paul. And I urge anybody who's going to do any donating or contributing this season to earmark their money for people who need motel stays and give it to St. Vincent de Paul, because they cut to the chase and get the job done. In half a day, I had Mark in a motel room.
And does this contrast with your attempt to reach the head of the shelter project and try to get him into a...
Well, we got the couple of days. It was an emergency situation, and we got involved with him to try and help beyond that because they can't help him right now.
They being...
The St. Vincent de Paul. They did what they could do at that moment, which was incredible, really, to get someone there in a matter of hours and get to him and get him in. And really, it was a wonderful thing that was done, but... the county is working with him, the Homeless Health Project, and he's on Medi-Cruise, and...
What about the city shelter project with Paul Brindell? How'd that go?
Well,
I
spoke with Paul last Sunday at home, after I talked to you on the air, and he said that they had no money, that they had people that were worse off than Mark, that had just gotten out of the hospital, and that they couldn't do it, but go to the Homeless Health Project and process it through them, get the referral from them, and if they gave him the referral, he would process it for him. So I was delighted because I was going to do that. The next day I spoke with the person who was working with Mark.
And what you were trying to get exactly was a...
I wanted to get him back inside because...
this is a man in a wheelchair with
a leg
swollen and deteriorated.
Right. You see, when we got him out of the motel, when we picked him up, when he checked out, his leg was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we took him to the emergency room. And he should have been admitted, but I found out afterwards that the catchphrase there is Medi-Cruise. And because he's on Medi-Cruise, they don't admit them.
Huh.
If he'd have gone in there without any insurance at all, he'd have been admitted. Even Paul Prendell was disturbed that this man wasn't admitted. His leg is infected.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him antibiotics. They gave him anti-inflammatories. No pain relievers. The man's got to be in excruciating pain.
Mm-hmm.
His leg, the calf, measures 20 inches around.
Yeah, I saw it swollen.
That's a calf.
Several days ago, yeah.
Yeah, he's in danger of losing his leg. He's in danger of it backing up into his whole system and becoming toxic.
So when you talked to Brindell, he advised you to go to the Homeless Health Project, and then what happened?
Well, I was involved with them anyway because we were helping Mark, and there was somebody involved with him, and so I talked with that person who I'd already asked for a motel stay from and got no response, and he said, because the doctor gave him a prescription for a voucher, housing voucher, because the leg has to be elevated and he has to be reclined. And it's the normal thing you would tell anybody who's got a house. Stay off of it, lay back, recline it for the circulation. He can't do that, and he's cutting off his circulation. It's hanging. He's in trouble. Well, I got nowhere for a couple of days, and then I went called again and spoke with other people, and I gave the message that Paul Brindell gave me. They said, oh, fine, we'll give him a week. So I went through the process with them, got and communicated with the gentleman, told him, guess what, we're going to get you off the street. Yay. Then I find out after a half a dozen phone calls that they're not going to do this. Paul said he never talked to me. He didn't approve it. They said they don't have any money. Back and forth. The referral never got sent to...
They being who? Emmeline Street or...
No, Homeless Health Project
Homeless
over
Health
there.
Project. Okay.
They're next to the shelter down there. Mm-hmm. So bottom line is, no dice. He didn't get any help.
So you're saying that Brindell first talked to you and then denied talking to you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he said that, but the people who told me, I had conversations with people, and they told me that they thought it was approved, we have no money. And in the end, I just said, all I want to hear from you is the truth. It's very demoralizing and demeaning to people who are suffering to tell them you don't feel they need any help.
So they have $6 million in cost overruns for an indoor shooting range for the new police station, but they don't seem to have enough money to find shelter for a man whose leg may be lost.
I'll tell you the truth. I believe the money is there, and people are standing in the way of it. I believe that the state has appropriated money. I believe that the federal government has appropriated money. I believe that the county's holding the money, and they're just not letting it go to the people. They referred them back to Emmeline. Emmeline is not giving them the superior care. If they're on Medicruz, they're denied admittance in hospitals. Even Paul Brindell said himself, God, I brought someone in there with no insurance. They just put her in overnight. Not this guy, because he said the magic words, Medicruz.
And then they just denied him.
Just denied him. Right. Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about? I know you're pursuing a lawsuit with respect to problems with
Mercy Housing Charity.
Yeah.
I am. I'm involved in a lawsuit with them. I filed suit against them. Right.
Your complaint was?
Well, they're discriminating against me as a disabled person here in terms of the construction of the place, the design, accessibility, policies, and rules and regulations. That I don't believe, and God, please don't strike me, I don't believe they could get to me in yet another way.
So this is, we're talking about Sycamore Commons structure?
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a large project that houses how many people?
60 families.
And this is a project that's actually very close to the downtown. It's been
I got to put you on speaker. My arm is giving out.
Sure.
Hold on.
Okay.
I don't know how much longer I can hold up because I give out.
Well, we could talk about this some other time.
Yeah, I want to talk. My hand just gave out. I got to go.
No problem. Listen, thank you very much, caller, and I hope we can either see you or hear from you either by email or phone at the protest coming up on Tuesday.
I doubt that I'll be there. My condition is such that I can't participate, but I do urge people to try to communicate to the community, not to the city council when you get up there.
Right.
To let them know that we all get sick. We all have problems. This is life. And for those people who are out there right now, a day or two in a motel could change their lives. They can accomplish things. They can think straight. They can have the access to phones and warmth and hot water. And sometimes it can really turn their lives around.
Thank you, Eleanor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Here we are at Butterfingers Central, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Phone lines are open again, 427-3772.
said there's a plan. So here is the land. Dig roads, build pipes, put your hand on the earth, clench your fist.
Man could have 2 pounds of weed in his conga drum and not get busted and not go to jail if you have your proper medical marijuana papers, your prescription, but they will keep your medicine. That is not very cool.
No, it isn't. Anything you want to say about what specifically happened, or how do you feel about that?
Well, I would say that the times, they are a-changing.
But not changing fast enough?
Well, there's a lot of people out there that are loving people in their hearts that have not changed, and they will not change. They're always going to be the same because they have faith. Right now. So, I'll say this to you. Hot dog, I'm a homeless man.
And that is a copyrighted song, so we aren't going to be able to play that one on the air by the request of Hot Dog. But at another time, we may be able to give you some of Hot Dog's music, which it's actually, it's his music from his voice and his beat from his conga drum. You can find him across from the Metro in near the parking lot of Union Grove Music. In the meantime, we do have lines open, 427-3772 at Free Radio Santa Cruz, so give us a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
If it's a copyrighted song, it means the gentleman believes in private property.
Well, let me put it this way. He requested that I delay publication of the song until a later time. So but call it a point of personal privilege.
If I'm correct, or just in that concept, what do you make of that? What do you think about private property, Robert?
Well, I've got some private property myself. I don't share it with everybody. I guess I believe in private property, but it depends on what you mean. And I don't believe that the earth is private property, for instance.
Want to explore this a little bit?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I hope we can explore it at the Sleeping Band protest on Tuesday. We're talking, of course, to the man who helped circulate a very significant initiative, which has been ignored by the city, both around the Sleeping Band and then the second one around rent control. And you are going to be speaking publicly on this issue in San Jose. Is that not a fact?
In fact, this is organized by Joe Rodriguez, who is a reporter for the Mercury. It's a forum by the Human Concerns Commission of the Catholic Diocese of San Jose, and it's 7 p.m. December 14th at the Isaac Newton Room of the Santa Clara County Office Building, which is at 70 West Heading in San Jose. I'll give a number over the air that people can call for more information. It's 408-983-0137. It'll be Bob Bronstein, who organized rent control from San Jose back in the 70s, and woman from Sacramento whose name I got pop up here in a minute. Let me get this. I'm looking forward to this, by the way. Okay, it's going to have Bob Bronstein and Sacramento attorney Christine Minahan, who's one of the best rent law experts in California, according to
Rodriguez. And, of course, Santa Cruz renegade Bob LaMonica.
I've been invited, which I think is a real honor. I do believe in rent control. I believe that private property owners have rights, but I believe that if we're going to continue with what was started in 1215 with the Magna Carta, we end up having to look at the fact that people without vested interests have rights in a modern republic. And they have the right to be protected by law from exploitation. And to me, this is very sincere. And I believe that rent control is inevitable. It's going to happen in one of the communities in the Bay Area, and that will be reborn again.
You know, it's interesting. I remember hearing you on KSCO when you were pressing the rent control initiative that was so pointedly ignored by the last city council, or this current city council, I guess, until Tuesday. Have you had any indication from Ed Porter, Kennedy, Riley, or Mark Premack that they may give it a more sympathetic reception? I assume not.
I doubt, seriously. Rent control, unless it is shown to be on its way towards a bandwagon, and I don't want to take away from any initiative that may be evolving from this new city council, I would ask that they examine rent control and at least open the dialogue on it, as I have asked before, on this vital issue in our time. But I don't see it happening, based upon prior experience, without a bandwagon.
Nobody has called you up and said, I would like to, you know, get this issue at least put into a subcommittee or discuss.
No way. I have made outreach, and I will continue to make outreach on this issue.
There's some who say that we should, you know, give this new city council a chance. They aren't even in office yet. This is what I hear from people. And yet, you know, it has to be said that these city council people, at least three of the four, and even four of the four, considering Emily Riley's been coming to probably more city council meetings than all the rest of them as well, perhaps with the exception of Ed Porter, they have been around on the Santa Cruz scene. They are conversant with the city council's operations. And they know, for instance, that there are only going to be two meetings, this meeting on the 28th and the December meeting, the first December meeting, before city council goes on vacation. And if anything is to be done around rent control or homeless people and shelter and the sleeping ban, it has to happen immediately. They have to, so we say, take a step away from traditional indifference and their little coronation celebration that's going to be happening.
What do you expect to happen?
And
Robert?
Do something real. What I'm saying is that
I hear what you're saying.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that we should. I don't think it's time for us to step back and say, "Oh gosh, these are new council members. Let's give them a couple of months." I think if that's the case, homeless people should be camped in their backyards saying, "Well, sure, we'll give you a couple months. If in the meantime you can give us a legal place to be at night so we're not being arrested or harassed or beaten up." And I hear people talking about this in the election campaign a little bit, but no proposals. None of these four council members have called back the homeless working group. I suspect that none of them have given you anything concrete on rent control.
It won't happen. It's a fantasy.
So what I'm saying
I would like to be proven wrong, Robert.
Right, no. And so what I'm saying is the community shouldn't give them any rope.
What you're going to see, as far as
no
I'm
rope,
concerned,
thank you.
Is the same thing that happened when the the last, quote, progressive mandate, which was they're going to spin issues out until the next election.
Well, I think
anything that's provocative, unless it's a bandwagon robber,
I think that what you, I think you're right,
out.
Bob, and I think what our previous caller was saying about don't address the council, address the community, because it's the community that's going to cause these things to happen, whether it's rent control, whether it's restoration of human rights for poor people outside, you know, whether it's justice for the people at the Dolphin and Lee Apartments and other low-income people throughout the city, and just moderate-income people, if you've pointed out, you know, I mean, you pointed that out on KSCO, and I guess you'll be discussing that on the 14th of December in San Jose. You know, this impacts great numbers of renters who are just being moved out of the area.
It is, in my opinion, in a broader sense, it gets down to whether or not we want to recreate feudalism. And forgive me for my words being incorrect, but millennium politics, this fear of taking on provocative issues without a pre-existing bandwagon, we are slipping towards this incredible two-tiered economy to which I think any of us that look at the course of the last 150 years would be appalled by.
Right,
the last 150 years are all about government intervention in unbridled capitalistic markets.
So you're talking
about that with a straight face without fear.
You're talking about the two-tiered economy being the subsidized low-income, very low-income folks.
Yeah.
Who actually have less and less subsidization, and then those, of course, who are, you know, the dot-commers and the yuppies
and
the gentrified folks who have all the choices and much of the money and are making it in hand over fist.
The Magna Carta was about protecting the peers, the gentry, those that own vast amounts of property so that the king couldn't mess with them without due process of law. You know, it's taken us to this point where we at least seriously address the fact that government, one of the things that government can do is to intervene, to redistribute wealth, because the human condition tends towards exploitation and greed. I think we need to bring these things above board in polite and clear terms and take it on.
Now,
otherwise, we are not living up to our mandate as citizens with the opportunity to participate.
Bob, is there a website that you recommend people go to who want to learn more about rent control
and
the struggle?
I would like to see that evolve more on a basis where there is a linkable website for rent control as an issue, but smrr.org is, in my opinion, the best, smrr.org, and that can take you to most of the websites if you're willing to be patient surfing.
Mm-hmm.
That's Santa Monica's for Renters' Rights.
smrr.org.
Right. That's probably the single best. San Francisco, the Tenants Union, has a good website. There are several good websites. What there is not that I have ever seen surfing is a singular website that advocates rent control.
Mm-hmm.
But there is quite a bit out there. The entire province of Ontario adopted a rent control in 1992. We're not talking about some crackpot scheme.
Mm-hmm. And
we're talking about something that is imperfect, but is implementable and is done to respect the dignity of those that do not own property that are being gouged.
Now, does Ontario rent control also have vacancy decontrol or not? That is to say, do they have
I honestly don't know that, Robert.
Because that's an interesting question. I know that I felt vacancy decontrol screwed over rent control here in this state, and I know that you may disagree with me on that, but I'd be curious to know if Ontario has a situation whereby if you give up your apartment, the rent control stays in effect.
I tell you what, those that use vacancy decontrol as a way to slough off rent control in the 2000s, what they're doing is they're not being sincere. If you really are against vacancy decontrol, well, then advocate rent control so that you can have a platform to come from that is positive.
Right,
now, personally, I feel that vacancy decontrol is appropriate. Rent control stabilizes residential rent while you're a tenant. You move out, you go face the open market. But while you're a tenant, you have that respect and dignity of knowing that your rent increases are being regulated.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty sincere. I think what vacancy decontrol does also is it takes any valid, non-emotional argument away from property owners.
I understand, and I've heard you talk about this before. I'm concerned that the renter protections are so limited that, you know, I'm moving my grandmother in, you're going to have to move out.
That's going to happen. There has to be some flexibility for property owners to have rights and to go-
Flexibility,
there?
Yes. Excuse
yeah, okay.
to evict, no.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to describe that. Let me again give you. Let's give the time and date of this event you're going to be speaking at. And also, is there a number people can call
yes,
if they want
sir.
More information?
Let me give you the number a couple of times. 408-983-0137.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 7 p.m. December 14th, which is a Thursday, at the Isaac Newton Room of the Santa Clara County Office Building. The Human Concerns Commission of the Catholic Diocese of San Jose's Forum on Rent Control. Once again, the phone number is 408-983-0137, December 14th, over the hill at the Isaac Newton Room of the Santa Clara County Office Building at 7 p.m.
In the meantime, check the San Jose Mercury News columnist,
Joe Rodriguez.
Joe Rodriguez.
You can read his stuff on the, his stuff doesn't always make the local section of the Merc that we get here,
mm-hmm.
but you can always catch him on the web online.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Robert, thank you.
All right.
Have a great day.
You too. And the phone lines once again open here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. What Bob was saying about the Magna Carta being a Magna Carta for the rich kind of brought to mind an article I read last night that I wanted to share with all of you out there by Howard Zinn, the radical historian who's written A People's History of the United States, and also came out against the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban when he was speaking up at UCSC in 1996. He actually gave us a nice quote along the lines of that we should be disturbing the sleep of people who pass those kinds of laws. And I believe that Mayor Mike Rodkin may have even been in the audience, or possibly the vice mayor was in the audience. The article is from the Progressive magazine. It's called A Campaign Without Class. There came a rare, amusing moment in this presidential race when George W. Bush, who has raised $177 million, accused Al Gore, who has raised only $126 million, of appealing to class warfare. It recalled the 1988 election when Bush's father, is this a genetic disorder, accused candidate Michael Dukakis of instigating class antagonism. I noticed that neither of the accused responded with a defiant, "Yes, we have classes in this country." Only Ralph Nader has dared to suggest that this country is divided among the rich, the poor, and the nervous in between. This kind of talk is unpardonably rude and was enough to bar him from the televised debates. We have learned that we mustn't talk of class divisions in this country. It upsets our political leaders. We must believe we are one family, me and Exxon, you and Microsoft, the children of the CEOs and the children of the janitors. We must believe our interests are the same. That's why we speak of going to war, quote, for the national interest, as if it were all in our interest. That's why we maintain an enormous military budget for national security, as if our nuclear weapons strengthen the security of all and not the securities of some. That's why our culture is soaked in the idea of patriotism, which is piped into our consciousness from the first grade, where we begin every day by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Not to mention under God. I remember stumbling over that big word indivisible with good reason, although I didn't know the reason, being quite politically backward at the age of six. Only later did I begin to understand that our nation, from the start, has been divided by class, race, national origin, has been beset by fierce conflicts, yes, class conflicts, all throughout our history. The culture labors strenuously to keep that out of the history books, to maintain the idea of a monolithic noble us against a shadowy but unmistakably evil them. It starts with the story of the American Revolution, and as the recent movie The Patriot, Kindergarten History put on the screen for millions of viewers, tells us once more, we were united in glorious struggle against British rule. The mythology surrounding the Founding Fathers is based on the idea that we Americans were indeed one family, and that our founding document, the Constitution, represented all our interests, as declared proudly by the opening words of its preamble, "We, the people of the United States." It may therefore seem surly for us to report that the American Revolution was not a war waged by a united population. The 150 years leading up to the Revolution were filled with conflict, yes, class conflict. Servants and slaves against their masters, tenants against landlords, poor people in the cities rioting for food and flour against profiteering merchants, mutinies of sailors against their captains. Thus, when the Revolutionary War began, some colonists saw the war as one of liberation, but many others saw it as the substitution of one set of rulers for another. As for black slaves and Indians, there was little to choose between the British and the Americans. This class conflict inside the Revolution came dramatically alive with mutinies in George Washington's army. In 1781, after enduring 5 years of war, casualties in the Revolutionary War exceeded, in proportion to population, American casualties in World War II. More than 1,000 soldiers from Pennsylvania, mostly foreign-born from Ireland, Scotland, and Germany, mutinied at Morristown, New Jersey. They had seen their officers paid handsomely, fed and clothed well, while the privates and sergeants were fed slop, marched in rags, without shoes, paid in virtually worthless continental currency, or not paid at all for months. They were abused, beaten, whipped by their officers for the smallest breach of discipline. Their deepest grievance was that they wanted out of the war, claiming their terms of enlistment had elapsed, and they were kept in the army by force. They were aware that in the spring of 1780, 11 Morristown deserters were sentenced to death, but at the last minute received a reprieve, except for one of them, who had forged discharges for 100 men. He was hanged. George Washington faced by this time 1,700 mutineers, a substantial part of his army, assembled them at Princetown, New Jersey, and decided to make concessions. Many of the rebels were allowed to leave the army, and Washington asked the governors of the various states for money to deal with the grievances of the soldiers. The Pennsylvania line quieted down. But when another mutiny broke out on the New Jersey line, involving only a few hundred, Washington ordered harsh measures. He saw the possibility of, quote, this dangerous spirit spreading. Two of the, quote, most atrocious offenders, unquote, were court-martialed on the spot and sentenced to be shot. Their fellow mutineers, some of them weeping as they did so, carried out the executions. Howard Fast tells us the story of the mutinies in his novel, The Proud and the Free. You can get that in the library. That's Howard Fast, F-A-S-T, The Proud and the Free. Drawing from the classic historical account of Carl Van Doren, Mutiny in January, Fast dramatizes the class conflict inside the Revolutionary Army. One of his characters, the mutinous soldier Jack Maloney, recalls the words of Thomas Paine and the promise of freedom, and says, yes, he is willing to die for that freedom, quote, but not for that fine Pennsylvania ladies in their silks and satins, not for the property of every dirty lord and fat patroon in New Jersey. When the war for independence was won, class conflict continued in the new nation. The founding fathers fashioned a constitution that would enable a strong federal government to suppress any rebellion by its unruly children. The new government would serve the interests of slaveholders, merchants, manufacturers, land speculators, while offering white males with some property a degree of influence, but not dominance in the political process. The history of the next 200 years is a history of control of the nation by one class, as the government, solidly in the hands of the rich, gave huge gifts of the nation's resources to the railroad magnates, the industrialists, and the shipowners. Historian Charles Beard, in the first years of the Great Depression, wrote caustically about the myth of rugged individualism, noting that industrial and financial leaders were not rugged enough to make their own way in the world and had to be subsidized and silver spoon-fed by the government. When the ruling class, I've tried to avoid that old-fashioned radical expression, but it expresses a simple, strong truth, faced resistance, as it did all through the 19th and 20th centuries, by slaves, working people, farmers, and especially by the indigenous people of the continent, it called upon the government to use its armies and its courts to put down the ingrates. Political leaders have traditionally become annoyed when someone dared to suggest that we live in a class society dominated by the moneyed interests. Thus, when Eugene V. Debs, opposing World War I, told an assembly in Ohio that, quote, the master class has always brought a war and the subject class has always fought the battle. This could not be tolerated. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison, and Oliver Wendell Holmes, in the spirit of patriotic liberalism, affirmed the sentence for a unanimous Supreme Court. Today, even the slightest suggestion that we are a nation divided by class brings angry reactions. When Gore talked ominously about big money, while pocketing huge amounts of it for his campaign, it was enough for Bush to become indignant. Surely he need not worry. Gore and Lieberman represent no threat to the rule of the super-rich. A New York Times reporter, in a rare excursion into the other America, spoke to people in Cross City, Florida, about the election and concluded, people here look at Al Gore and George W. Bush and see two men born to the country club, men whose family histories jingle with silver spoons. They appear to people here just the same. Cindy Lamb, a cashier at a Chevron filling station and wife of a construction worker, told the reporter, "I don't think they think about people like us, and if they do care, they're not going to do anything for us. Maybe if they had ever lived in a two-bedroom trailer, it would be different." An African-American woman, a manager at McDonald's who makes slightly more than the minimum wage of $5.15 an hour, said about Bush and Gore, "I don't even pay attention to those two, and all my friends say the same. My life won't change." The election soon will be over, and whether Gore or Bush is in the White House, the same class that has always dominated our political and economic systems in the United States will still be in power. Whoever is president, we will face the same challenge the day after the voting, how to bring together the class of have-nots, a great majority of the country, into the kind of social movement that in the past has gained some measure of justice and has made people in charge tremble at the prospect of class warfare. Such a movement, responding to the great challenges of the new century, could bring democracy alive. And that's a story by Howard Zinn, I should say, an essay in the Progressive magazine. You can see, you can read it at the library, the November issue of the Progressive. And this is still Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And our phone number is still 427-3772. Let's go back to the streets of Santa Cruz and hear a few voices there.
We are talking to Hot Dog. Hey, Hot Dog. Why are cars more important than people? I don't get it. Every parking lot that is closed at night where cars can't park should be chained off, and a person, not a car, can have the dignity to lay their body down in their head down there. All this shit can be figured out. Why should Santa Cruz be singled out as a place where intelligence should come down throughout the entire nation to realize that you focus on people's positive things, things that they are good at, and if they're down and out, not all people are going to be subject to this, and not everybody's going to move here either, but there's an Indian guy that has an old story that was told to me about the peacemaker, and all the Indians were being slaughtered, and he got a few tribes together up by the Great Lakes, and he built these places called the longhouses. And I see these places real clearly in my mind. They're just like a barn. It's real simple to build. And the door is open. And it's all functional, like the heat, energy, everybody cooks off everything that's burnable, and all the water is heated there, and all your gray water goes down to water the garden and all that. It can be done. And just because we figure it out here in Santa Cruz doesn't mean everybody in the world is going to move over here, because they have their family and their places. They just want to figure it out, too. This is a big problem we got to deal with. They've got to face it forward and get it straight. Hot Dog, you've been living outside for a while.
13 years.
And you know about the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban I guess they've been enforcing it less, but it's still on the books.
Brother, I went to jail over this issue.
And we're interrupting the taped interview from the streets of a couple days ago to bring you a special live phone call from the psychiatric unit of Dominican Hospital. Hey, caller.
Hi, this is Chris Brosna, mental health number 389769, and the spelling of the last name is Boy Robert Ocean Zebra Delta.
That's B-R-O-Z-D-A, Brosna.
Da is in Russian, and Noam also was forcibly taken. Noam, a resident of St. Petersburg, born in Leningrad.
But let's get to your case, Chris. What's
my case? Well, the Noam is like Noam's in it. We were both forced to have our blood drawn this morning. There's somebody now interfering. Okay, so there's lunch being served, and the phone number on the unit at the locked facility at 1555 Soquel Drive is 476-9828.
And you're requesting people give you a call?
Either that or write me at 155 Soquel Drive.
And again, the phone number is?
476-9828. And I have a white phone, and we have a free phone and a pay phone, and I gave the pay phone number, and somebody has just moved all my papers. In other words, he's taken all of my things that I had arranged, and he's rearranged them. So I have to go get my papers, as I have a stack of literally 200 pages proving my competency.
Now, you're going to court soon. You want to talk about that before you go, or do you got to get going now?
No, I don't have to get going. I can skip lunch in order to get this through. I'm being conserved.
Now, what exactly is that, Chris? What does that mean?
A conservatorship is to deprive the person of his legal being. And the public guardian's office is doing this.
What would that mean practically for you? If you were concerned, what effect would it have?
It means that I would not be able to determine what goes in my bloodstream, which means I would be unable to determine what they call an antipsychotic or neuroleptic medication.
You could be forcibly medicated.
I am being forcibly medicated. Mm-hmm. I was, if I don't take Zyprexia, they strap me down and shoot me up with Haldol. Now, this is very unpleasant stuff to take.
Mm-hmm.
I've argued and I just typed on a word processor, which I have access to 40 minutes a day, if I'm very good.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the Fourth Amendment gives, quote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons against seizures, unreasonable seizures, and I've argued, end quote, that any seizure with neuroleptic or antipsychotic medication is an unreasonable seizure of the person.
You mean any attempt to hold you down and force you to take medication?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In whatever manner. Now, what they do is, if you don't take Zyprexia, they shoot you up with Haldol.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't threaten to shoot you up with Zyprexia if you don't willingly take Zyprexia. They threaten to shoot you up with Haldol if you don't willingly take Zyprexia.
Tell us the difference between these two drugs.
The difference is that Zyprexia, or Risperidol, which is not a synonym for it, are supposedly newer neuroleptics or antipsychotic medications.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposedly more effective, and they don't cause the stupor that you see with Prolixin, Thorazine, or Haldol.
Mm-hmm.
These are heavy-duty industrial-strength brain cleansers that absolutely dope you shiceless and leave you a blithering, drooling idiot.
Now, do you favor any kind of psychiatric medication for yourself or not?
I only favor imposition of coercion of medicine in the case of depression.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Are you depressed at the moment?
No, but these drugs are CNS depressants or central nervous system depressants. So these drugs like Prolixin, Haldol, Thorazine, Zyprexia, Risperidol, mm-hmm. cause depression.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they treat mania, which is a high energy state. They treat it by depressing the manic. Now this is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
It is a bad idea when the state can impose against anyone's will a substance into their bloodstream and determine his so-called therapy or medicine. The use of the word medicine must be put in quotes in describing these substances, as these substances actually had produced a depression in me in 1989, a decade ago, in this very hospital, when a Dr. Hoban, and the correct spelling of his name is, I believe, H-O-B-A-N, imposed Prolixin against my will.
Let me ask you this, Krista. You attempted to get to avoid the this compulsory medication. There's a process called the Reiss hearing, which is a...
Well, they're not obeying. They don't feel that they think that since I'm temporarily conserved,
mm-hmm.
because they can merely file a paper, the county council can file a paper with a psychiatric report appended to it. They believe that they can just skip the Reiss hearing.
Now, the Reiss hearing, Reiss hearings are not often successful. I think only 10 or 20% of the people
right.
who say, I don't want to be forcibly medicated
right.
are allowed to avoid that medication. You
right.
also have been held for a month in a jail prior
correct.
To your being transferred to Dominican.
And
when were you transferred to Dominican?
I was transferred November 21st after being held a month in solitary confinement in Medical Unit O from October 19th after an arrest.
So what orphanages did you burn down to put you in that position there,
I burned down no orphanages.
Mm-hmm. What public officials did you shoot?
I did not shoot or threaten to shoot any public officials.
What?
I asked Jan Butz after photographing her.
She's a supervisor.
Yes, and Marty Warmhut after photographing her, why she would not come upon invitation by Michael Schmidt, the chief executive officer of the Chamber of Commerce of Santa Cruz, to a homeless working group meeting, which is held routinely at 611 Ocean Street at the Holiday Inn in the chamber offices. I asked her why she wouldn't come.
Mm-hmm.
However,
what was her answer?
She said she had already explained herself.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't explain herself to me,
mm-hmm.
and then the cops came, and I got a little loud, and I started comparing the Declaration of Independence protection of the life, liberty, and person, property of the person, in a phrase that was written in 1776 in that document to the Fifth Amendment, in which the phrase also, nor shall he be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And this is reading directly from the Fifth Amendment, and that language is also in the 14th Amendment, which mentions also, quote, privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States.
Well, I know that.
I notice is mentioned also in Article 4, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution.
Let me just say that you were then taken to jail on four or five counts, which had to do with what? Resisting arrest, or
I
think.
Supposedly, I threatened to kill Eric Seeley upon my release.
That's Officer Seeley,
the new
homeless officer.
He's the same smirking gendarme that arrested me after, in 1997, 3.5 years ago, after depriving me of my First Amendment right to do the 3-minute oral communication to City Hall, which I understand has been a problem of yours, and that City Hall has denied you even your 3-minute oral communication, and you purportedly are trying to get them into tort. I think you should sue for damages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a Brown Act, series of Brown Act violations I'm suing for that most of them have to do with a variety of things other than oral communications, but some of them have to do with the failure to allow reasonable access to
now,
oral communications.
Hung themselves, two homeless people hung themselves. Who were they?
One of them was, I've got to get their names here. What I'm going to ask my producer to do is call in and give them to the rest of the audience, and I will try to pass them on to you, Chris, because I know right now you don't have a radio, and that's something else you're looking for, right?
I'm looking for a radio and a word processor and an honest attorney.
Uh-huh. Well, those are 2 out of 3 ain't bad, maybe, huh? Or maybe 1 out of 3 ain't bad. We're talking to
Diogenes.
We're talking to Chris
man.
Brozda, who's, shall we say, unconventional approaches to City Council and the Board of Supervisors have produced a lot of consternation.
A little screaming, some frothing.
Well,
not,
no, I would say, no, I didn't hear you screaming. I saw you doing yoga exercises in the front row while the supervisors
protected
City
speech.
Council. Perhaps that's a healthy a response to an unresponsive City Council. I don't know. Anyway, I know that you were held for a month. You have a trial coming up, right?
The best revenge is to live well. And I don't want any of the Board of Supervisors, the supervisors, the BS there to interrupt the yoga session. When I can spike a shoulder stand and hold that for 200 breaths with my hands straight up in the air, and I intend to do this as soon as I get out, go and spike a couple shoulder stands up at the Board of Supervisors.
You're talking about simply a nonviolent, should we say, exercise suggesting of yoga activity.
Yeah, that's it. And this is protected under the First Amendment since movement is protected.
Well, you have a trial coming up, and you also have a conservatorship hearing coming up. Anything about that before we move on here?
The trial, or conservatorship hearing, is Monday, tomorrow, 9 a.m.
In department?
I'm not certain, because it's just filed by Elizabeth McIntyre and RN.
If anybody's interested in attending that, you should go to the court around 8:30 in the morning and look under the court calendars for Brozda, B-R-O-Z-D-A.
And I
myself will be in...
number again if you need to use it as a password on your computer. I'm thinking
I will be myself in San Jose because I have a hearing over there for... disrupting a city council meeting, I think.
Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I think I only wish that the council was really responding, but of course they're continuing to ignore the issue of the San Jose homeless. The other thing is you have an LPS hearing coming up, or you have a hearing for a conservatorship, a formal jury trial for a conservatorship, and that is when? Do we know?
Well, my attorney has been lax to communicate with me, so I have my father communicate with her, and then he tells me what dates are coming up. But she hasn't told me, but I believe I've got something December 5th.
Well, I know that you were...
December 15th.
I think you have it...
And November 27th.
So a number of court dates. For anyone who's interested in following this case, do give a call to our off-air line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, where we can kind of, there's a lot of dates being thrown around here,
yep.
Plus a phone number and an address for Chris Brozda.
If you want to write my internet plumber, his name is Eric Brozda, and he's at, let me see, if you could write him at, if you
I'll tell you what,
call,
let me, let,
no,
Chris, let me have you give that number off
you know
air.
What I need a payee. With third-party intervention.
Right. Let's talk about that in a future call.
Uh-huh.
Because I think right now we've given out a lot of information, and hopefully again the phone number to reach you is
476-9828.
Any concluding words, Chris?
Locked ward at Dominican, mental health. I'm completely safe and sane and ready to spike several hundred breath shoulder stands at the next Board of Supervisors Tuesday regularly at 9 a.m. And I hope some of the students on the list in the Catastrophic Mathematics Social Set Analog Ideal Investigative Fusion Studies Group, of which I'm a moderator,
slow down,
come and meet me there.
Hey, thank you, Chris.
Thanks a lot. Oh, by the way, for my electronic ID, call 464-0501.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And more information on Chris Brozda, give a call to 423-HUFF in case you're interested in that. Chris is a man who's often outspoken, but I have not seen him engage in any physical violence in some time, and frankly, I think he's being held in an inappropriate way, although we'll see what happens. Hi, you're on free radio.
Oh, hey, Robert. This is Grant calling. Officer Grant?
Oh, yes. This is the officer who's been giving out sleeping band tickets all over town, but actually we've missed you. You're also part of Art and Revolution. And
yeah, well, we missed you too, Robert.
Well, I know. You've been trying real hard. Happy John Dine felt your... No, I guess that's another officer.
No, it's one of my buddies there.
A different officer.
Yeah, right.
So I saw you the other day. You were, should we say, proceeding around in your clerical garb.
Right.
I didn't realize you were also a man of the cloth.
Well, sometimes we have to go to the higher authority, and I felt compelled to do that on International Buy Nothing Day.
Did you end up buying nothing, by the way?
I did, actually. It was incredible. It was an enlightening experience, both physically and spiritually.
We're actually about to play some of that tape, Grant. We're about to play some of that, but...
Wonderful.
You have some announcements, perhaps, you want to make.
Oh, let's see. I actually wanted to mention to people that there is this coming Saturday is the annual Hometown Holiday Parade that the Downtown Business Association sponsors. That's the Christmas parade. And our group, Art and Revolution, as well as other groups, are going to be participating in the parade. And the theme, at least with Art and Revolution, is the best things in life are free. And people are welcome to consider how they might want to interpret that statement for the holidays.
A massive shoplifting up and down the street.
that would definitely make it free, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Perhaps the occupation of unused space in office buildings at night by homeless people?
By Santa and his elves, I think, would be very thematically.
Well, the elves do need a place to kind of do their work.
That's right. And they potentially could be sweatshop elves. I'm not sure. I think that they'd be trying to organize for quite a while, but since it might be keeping them down, I don't know.
Well,
so maybe we'll find out. And so we welcome people to participate with us in that.
And when does that begin?
The parade starts at 10 a.m. Saturday, December 2nd, mm-hmm. and people will be meeting starting at 9:30 in the parking lot behind Logos. Mm-hmm. Kinko's.
Kinko's. That's where the Ralph Nader Vehicles for Social Responsibility began there,
Yes, yes. So that's where things get vehicular and we get moving.
And, of course, that night there's a Veterans Hall December 2nd Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcast, a benefit.
That's right, yeah.
Sin in Space, Kindness, Preteens, Mezzo Vermouth, Comets on Fire. Perhaps you'll come and give tickets or perhaps spiritual guidance, depending on whether you're a police officer or a cleric.
If I embody a priest on Saturday, in fact, I would be more than happy to come and give my benediction or whatever is requested and, that evening. We'll go from one end to the other.
Some Benedictine, perhaps.
Yes, maybe a little Benedictine would be very nice.
And you also have an Art and Revolution meeting tomorrow,
I believe? That's right. It's on Monday evening at 7:30 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are interested in finding out what we have been doing and what we are going to be doing, it's a great opportunity to get updates as to what's happening. So you can just come and observe, or you can come and participate.
Do you intend to come help the police arrest homeless people the next night, Tuesday night, at City Council when they have a protest? I guess we're intending to do a protest of the new coronation. We're going to present the old council with possibly... We are thinking...
Some new clothes? Will you be giving them some new clothes?
Well, we're thinking they need something to cover the nakedness, the naked hypocrisy that's going on there, and I think some new clothes might be appropriate.
Yeah, I think that sounds...
There is talk about bringing a coffin into the council chambers to allow the council members to affirm the fact that there are indeed homeless people dying, even though the Sentinel doesn't seem to be reporting it too much.
I think they have the just notices they're at the back of the
yeah, that's true. It's
paper.
Kind of boring. And actually,
don't you have to pay for those? I think one has to pay for those.
Well, you know, this is a society that runs on, you don't get nothing for nothing
right.
here.
At the Sentinel, they've really taken that to heart, and especially for the holidays, I'm sure they're printing those printing presses are probably going at maximum speed, right, as we speak.
And, yeah, that's all new, all news, all strong stuff from the Sentinel, as I like to call it.
Yeah, that's right.
I did get a call from Daryl Cole, the Sentinel, who was interested in catching up with the story of Boxer Bill, the quadriplegic who froze to death in the Beach Flats. He acknowledged the Sentinel hadn't written anything about it, but he was on the trail of the story only a week and a half late.
Oh, right. They are so fast there.
Well, they had other more important things, like boosting the charities that give out turkeys once a year, which all very well.
And they know a lot about turkeys, I think.
Turkeys, and we'll be seeing some of those on Tuesday, new turkeys and old turkeys.
Yeah.
And, of course, as you know, the city council will be retiring to the Civic Auditorium afterward for a reception.
Oh, that's for the gobbling of the turkeys.
We're hoping they will gobble on. And we're hoping that you will come and do a little gobbling yourself.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
absolutely.
I think we need your protection and your counsel in case, some homeless people decide to lay down their sleeping bags. Perhaps you can persuade them the best thing to do is to go out in the cold and just, follow the law, show
right.
some respect for our community.
Just move along.
That's right.
Well, I will do my best there. And
is there a number people can reach Art and Revolution at?
People can call 426-2292. It's 426-2292.
426-2292.
Yeah.
Now, will you promise not to arrest the people who call, or will you make selective arrests?
We make no promises, and we take no hostages.
I see. Now, I have been asking you a lot of questions, but is there more that you wanted to pass on to us?
No, I think that's basically it. And you asked all the right questions. It was incredible.
Well, I appreciate. I mean, I keeping my eye on you, and I, as I said, we'll be playing some of your work from the shop not lest you be shopped. I'm not sure.
Something like that. Yes. Yeah. I was leading a congregation of Shopaholics Anonymous as we made our way up and down the mall.
With your shopping bags, I remember.
Oh,
there
absolutely.
Folks
yes,
wearing,
we were.
Very, very, I should say, appropriate middle-class clothing, trying to buy their way and help the businesses to proceed, to get still more, actually, it's supposed to be the biggest shopping day after the year is, after Thanksgiving, right?
That's right, it is, and that's why it's also international, and it is, in fact, international Buy Nothing Day. There's groups that do actions in Japan, in many countries in Europe, and I think in a number of other parts of the world.
So. I see the Sentinel gave you splendid coverage of the
absolutely.
Whole thing.
Yes,
front page.
We followed up on our calls to them to let them know in advance, and they really came through big time.
You did have a police escort for a bit of the time.
I know, yes.
But they mostly were, I guess, reduced to harassing homeless people who sat down nearby. I noticed
yes,
that.
Yes, we were also pointed out that we had dropped two twist ties, and that Super was considered littering by local police. So
that's good. I mean,
thank them very much for their concern and recycled those twist ties.
Well, now, how long did this whole protest take? It began about what time? Want to give us a brief description?
It was more of a celebration than a protest. Mm-hmm. We were celebrating, I think, with some degree of outrage, but also in the spirit of the days, we also we were also celebrating.
Mm-hmm. Moving from shop to shop, giving them the business, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Shop till we drop. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry. What was your question again, there, Robert?
I was just wondering how when the protest started and how long it lasted.
Oh, I think it was probably about 3 hours in its full length. And we, after some degree of harassment by the police, we did move from in front of the Gap up the mall, and so we moved along and. Some of the time we were marching in two lines behind our puppet master, and
you had a huge formerly the Nader puppet, and this was sort of a new puppet, right? Or
right, it's the brave new puppet, yeah.
The brave
right.
new puppet, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And and we looked to that puppet for guidance.
We're talking about a 12-foot tall puppet, of course.
Yes, it was really in accordance to the 12-step program that we were.
Well, you realize that structures on the mall over 6 feet are not allowed after dark. Therefore, you make sure your puppet is in after curfew,
yes.
or he'll have to be, should we say,
or
disassembled.
Bending down, I think, helps a lot.
Yeah, bending down to authority is always appropriate.
That's right. And we really also, at that time that we were being harassed, we really encouraged people to enter any shop. That it really was much more dangerous out on the street than it was to be consuming within.
You know, that's exactly how we felt in L.A. When the police were marching around. I must say that you've learned something from our experiences down there.
I try to do my best to learn from others' experiences. Save me the trouble.
Yes. So this went on for several hours?
Yes, and we took testimonials from, which you may have recorded, some of the testimonials of Shopaholics Anonymous, how people were lost and then...
I thought it was Shopaholics Unanimous.
It's close to unanimous, but there's a few that are out there that really have... It was actually quite encouraging. I was offering free corporate dollars to passersby, and really people had incredible fortitude. A lot of people did not accept free money, and it was just... really heartwarming to realize how in a capitalist society people would not just have that.
Well, if you want free dollars, we can have people call you up and ask for the free dollars that they declined to do at that time.
Right, maybe. That's true. Yeah.
So this went on for a couple, and there were no tickets given, no arrests made?
No tickets, no arrests, nothing illegal, in fact, but, yeah.
Well, that's... I suppose that's a successful protest.
I think so. I think it was.
So again, tomorrow, Art and Revolution, 7:30 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Right.
And then you'll be having your December 2nd rally in back of Kinko's to parade on down. You know, this is the famous Christmas Day parade. I guess it's not
that's
Christmas,
right.
But it's December 2nd.
Right.
It's the day that, the famous day that Marty Wormhout back in 1988 decided to go after homeless people and began the famous food wars because we had a shopping cart battalion behind Marty Wormhout and her car broke down.
Oh,
and here
no.
was the bag lady's brigade right behind her, and she just was so mortified that when we went to the town clock afterwards, she sent Jim Lang to make sure that we didn't give out hot soup to homeless people. So that began the 4-month-long, actually it was more like an 8-month-long food wars, if you may remember, from the old days.
Yes, well, definitely in honor of that, people should seriously consider participating. And who knows what will happen in this procession. I think that there's a lot of potential.
And I encourage you to get those shopaholics to City Hall on Tuesday. We'll be having some hot broth. They won't have to buy anything.
That's
they can actually
right.
get it free.
That's right.
In fact, if they prefer not to buy what the new council is selling them, I think we'll all be a lot better.
I will try to round up as many of those shopaholics as I can, and I don't think that will be hard. I think that is quite an easy task.
That's great. And remember to bring any puppets that may be wandering around as well.
That's true. That's a good point. And I also just encourage people, if they want more information on Art and Revolution Convergence in Santa Cruz, they can call 426-2292.
Sounds great.
And good talking with you, Robert, and maybe a good show.
Hey, it's good to hear you.
Yeah, likewise. All right, take care.
Bye-bye. And, hey, looks like different folks are organizing for coming up to, I would like to see us kind of dovetailing, shopaholics, rent control advocates. Hey, free love advocates, come on down to the City Hall at 6:30. We got some hot soup, but more important, hotter issues that we have to raise. And I know that folks think we should give the City Council a chance. I'm going to give them at least 15 minutes to get it together. After all, they had only 2 years to see this issue endlessly dragged through subcommittees, committees, the Homeless Issues Task Force. We're talking about the sleeping ban here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. Let's get back to interviews on the street, and let's get back to you if and when you call in. Again, the phone number here is 427-3772.
Right down here behind Foster Freeze, and a man named Bill Lee, who owned the house, and it was a red tag, but I didn't know that at the time. I knew they were living there because I had been living next door before. So one night I had too many beers at the Asti, and I had to lay down my head. I couldn't make it home. I knew that was my friend's house, and I went in his backyard, and some neighbor called at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and the cops came, and they gave me a ticket. You know, I didn't house them or nothing. So I ended up going to jail over this thing a couple of years later. So I went and did like 12 days in jail over this bullshit, and then a couple of open containers. You know, I buy my liquor to the liquor store, and I pay my taxes, and there's no place to drink the damn thing. You know, I mean, you pay the taxes, but you can't drink it. What's up with that? So, but when I went to jail over the 12 days last year, and I got sick on the 10th day, somebody's coughing or whatever in there, and then it was really so hard on me, because if I get pneumonia, you could plain ass kill me. So anyway, And the whole deal is oversleeping. That's unconstitutional. That's against the human nature. Everybody needs to sleep, man. Don't you get it? And how do you feel if you wake up in the morning, you haven't had a good night's sleep? You feel like shit. Well, so does everybody else. Come on, man. Let's wake up.
Hear, hear. Listen to that, City Council. Thank you, hot dog.
Go to the Centennial. Santa Cruz paper back to October 10th. I wrote an article. It says homeless in Santa Cruz. Read it.
Tell me about it. Give us a summary.
Well, I'm from Chicago, Illinois, one of the third biggest cities in the world. I've never been treated like such a piece of crap until I came here.
Tell me what happened. What was the first encounter you had with the cops?
I walked here from right off the Amtrak. We couldn't even get a ride from anywhere from San Francisco to here, so I walked, 80-some miles, and then found out that when I got here, just because I had a backpack on, I was in, to be harassed by police because, I looked like I was homeless. And ever since then, that's the way it's been. You can't find a place to sleep. It's always a catch-22. They got all these places supposed to help you, but you can't do that, and you can't do this. And so you're stuck. You got to go hide out, And if you hide out, then all you are is subsequent to the law, getting arrested.
So you yourself have found police officers questioning you because you have a backpack?
I still don't got my own ID anymore because of that, because they took it and I haven't got it back.
How long ago was that?
I'd say I've been here 5 months. That was about 4 months and a half ago.
Have you been hassled for sleeping? Has that happened to you?
That's every time, yeah. Every time, every day is a new beat trying to sleep somewhere.
When was the last time you had have you had any encounters with police around sleeping?
Yeah, the last time was, 12 hours ago, yeah.
Really? And what happened?
I didn't like where I was sleeping. Told me I had to get up and move or go to jail.
And where was that?
On top of the hill over there by, what's that church? On the hill there.
Holy Cross?
Holy Cross, yeah.
Anybody with you there or were you alone?
No, I always try to find a place to be alone where there's not a bunch of people. They have so many things going on down there at the river, they're doing all these attacks against homeless people because they're sleeping down there at the river. They ain't got no place to sleep, so they're just trying to find some place.
Have you had any friends who have been attacked in the last, or people who've been hit by troll busters?
Oh, yeah, that's part of being down there at the river. You go down there and they always got to have their little patrol bus to go down there and beat somebody up. And of course, they're not going to pick somebody that's, able to fight back. They always got to pick up on the elderly. They're 60, 50, late 50, 60 years old and on, They want to pick on the, helpless, They want to pick on somebody that can fight back.
Do you remember anybody in particular who you heard a particular report on who was beaten recently?
What?
Who was beaten up recently?
Well, I can't remember the guy's name, but yeah, and that was the incident I was talking about. Guy's in his 50s, late 50s, almost 60 years old. He's on SSI, he can't live in the economy here being on SSI. SSI pays good, but you can't live nowhere. You can't afford to live nowhere, You want a room costs $1,000 a month. How can you live anywhere when you're only getting $600 a month?
You want to say who you are?
Yeah, my name's Ed Kreider. And, I think this town needs to take a deep look because the next time an earthquake comes and they need people's help, who are they going to ask? They're not going to ask Joe Small behind the desk that's making $70,000, $80,000 a year. They're going to be asking the guys that are willing to go out there and get dirty with their hands, They need to look back, see what happens.
There's a protest at City Hall on Tuesday against the sleeping ban. Do you think that you and others will be there, or do you think that...
There's a lot of people going to be there. And whether or not that's going to have anything to do with the powers to be, because, this being such the, what do they call this, the tourist attraction, I still ain't got that one, Like I said, I'm from Chicago, You got Navy Pier, you got the Wharf, We got the Science and Industry, Field Museum, Planetarium. What y'all got? I ain't figured it out yet. Maybe 80-degree days, that's about it, weather-wise. So the rest of it, I don't see what the big tourism is. I really don't. And I think if, they can get the higher-ups to sit down and really take an honest look and stop pushing around their power, they might have something to happen. But until then, you're probably not going to get nothing accomplished.
Thank you. Anything you want to add?
No, I think I said my piece.
Thank you. Should be on free radio.
To the king of trolls, the story is told. For those minds you may not know. A young troll he was in Vietnam, swimming in the valley of death for the freedom of this land. Screams, police, those roaches who run from the truth and justice when the king comes around. And he pledges his allegiance to his flag, so he may say, some don't give a damn. His battles will be many for what is just and right, and I feel sorry for the politicians whom the troll eats with delight. And when will it end? Oh, the troll within. Oh, don't you run from him. Don't you see what's within?
And that, of course, was Michael Tomasi, the bane of the city council, the only person ever removed from the mic for saying the word nigger, and he was referring to himself, that the council and the city and the city's laws were treating homeless people like him, like, quote, niggers. And apparently Mayor Sugar found some opportunity to make some cheap theatrics and have him removed for saying that, for using words that describe realities that Mayor Sugar doesn't want talked about. Indeed, no city council members for the last 4 months have raised the issue of shelter or the sleeping ban, or even followed up on the resolutions that they passed unanimously on June 28th, for example, directing staff and the Homeless Services Center to find places for people to park on private property, since they were too gutless to do anything on public property, allowing a few businesses out in the Harvey West and the Mission Street Extension areas to turn the tide away from an enlightened proposal to allow people to park their vehicles and sleep in their vehicles. Where else can they sleep, folks? There's no space. There's no place. And it's time to take action on that. Hopefully that's going to be happening at City Council, not by the City Council. There's nothing on their agenda. We went to them dutifully a week ago. Christopher Crone made an appointment for 24 hours later, right before the agenda was to be finalized, with Homeless Working Group Representative Bernard Klitzner, who is accompanied by Becky Johnson. They waited half an hour from 9:30 to 10 o'clock in the offices of the City Council at the appointed time. Councilmember Crone didn't show up, didn't call back. He was gone. Instead, they saw the police chief, the city attorney, and all the folks who are normally a part of the making up the agenda, who aren't elected by the city, but who apparently essentially run the city and whose agenda is apparently law for the city, file in. But no Christopher Crone, no meeting, no callback. Now, I'd heard that Christopher's having some problems with complications around birth of a child by his wife, Rachel, but on further investigation, I'm finding that whatever the complications, that this didn't excuse his still having no contact with any of the people that are suffering outside. As I said, two have died of suicides. Two have died of drug overdoses. One has died of freezing to death. That's Boxer Billy, as I said, whose relatives, I'm hoping, will show up at this protest on Tuesday. And I'm encouraging people to come and bring nightwear. You might want to bring some black to wear. We're considering a coffin protest. That's a possibility. And the city council meeting that day is actually sort of a little unusual, so I'm going to run it by everyone in case you're listening to give you a sense of what's likely to be happening on November 28th in 2 days at city council for the last council meeting of the old council, the first council meeting, and the only the last two council meetings of the year, the last two regular council meetings, which will be this this one, and then the first one in the second week in December on Tuesday. On Tuesday the 28th at 3 o'clock, well, at 2 o'clock there's a litigation session, the closed session of City Council, where I think a lot of business goes on that we don't know about, but we don't get to hear about it. And unfortunately, council members who should be speaking out on these issues aren't, so they don't. 3 o'clock, there's going to be an unusual oral communications session at the beginning of the 3 o'clock session on November 28th, Tuesday. Normally, oral communications or public comment for 3 minutes by anybody in the public on any subject not on the agenda happens at 7 o'clock. But 7 o'clock is now going to be reserved for a joyous celebration of Kennedy, Premack, Porter, and Riley coming into power. The millennium has arrived, folks. And these folks who have declined to get back to homeless working group people, declined to propose anything specific for shelter emergencies, these are the people who are going to be coming in. They're going to be wined and dined and commended and get to make fancy speeches, and then they will retire to the Civic Auditorium across the street for what I understand is a public reception. And there, I think, is an opportunity for those of us who want to receive the City Council in the fashion which they should become accustomed if they're not dealing with issues. And I encourage people to go and use that opportunity to socialize with them. The Civic Auditorium is a fine place for a shelter. It was used as an emergency shelter after the earthquake for 5 days, though homeless people who had previously been homeless were actually excluded from that shelter, even though the shelter was full. They were arrested in front of the shelter over the objections of the people running the shelter. The police said, "You are violating the sleeping ban. You can't sleep out." So it's interesting that 12 years later we have a similar crisis, and we have the council using that huge space to do its own celebration of its self-congratulatory members coming into power. By the way, all four city council members, the new elected ones, were invited to call this show. They were contacted. One of them was contacted personally. He said he might deign to listen in to the show, but apparently doesn't want to appear speaking on the air with someone as disreputable as myself. These are individuals who got your votes, who put out money allegedly with programs that would supposedly have some meaningful impact, I would hope, on the poorest people in this community. But what we hear from them now, at this key time, as people are dying, weather temperatures are dropping, and there is a law against falling asleep or covering up with blankets in the city of Santa Cruz, silence is what we hear. I think it's important to break that silence, as I did last night, and I hope that you will do whenever you see something like this happen. I was walking down the street near New Leaf Market, and I saw three police officers. Actually, initially there was two, a community service officer and an ordinary blue-clad, gun-toting police officer, giving a ticket to a young person with a skateboard. And this whole process took like 15 minutes. They called in a sergeant. They ran a warrant check on him for an old skateboarding ticket unpaid. And I have to say, they didn't take him into custody, but throughout this entire time, I amused myself and hopefully educated the community by drawing the attention of walkers-by being pigs and babies.